Stop.
Right on. What's
up? Hey, man, what's your name?
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you. Kind of feeling any better today?
Yeah, I'm feeling better today, Earl.
I'm telling people.
I mean, is better good, or what do we got here?
No, it's a low bar.
It's a low bar.
Nah.
No, I mean, come on, man. You to get over the virus, I mean, these viruses, man, it's nothing to play with. But you're feeling a little better.
I am. I mean, this past weekend, it was a sinus problem, and so my face was just hurting the entire weekend. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's significantly better, honestly.
All right. And so it's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
How are you? I feel like I'm in a ward in the hospital, though.
Well, like, first me.
I've got my nurse's outfit on.
it's here, right? It's that time of year.
Apparently.
Yeah. And
Santa Claus, reindeer, and viruses.
And the virus.
Communicable diseases.
You know those Sandy Man?
The Sandy Man can.
Yeah.
Oh, Sandy, you're on a roll today.
it's going to be a tough winter, man. With these illnesses, man, and from some things I've been reading, there's even more that we haven't seen yet.
Well, I do think this. I think, you know, we all got inured to the notion that when COVID went away, we'd be back to not too much in the way of communicable diseases, and I think our memories lapsed about how bad the flu can be. But this RVS thing is sort of a new entrant as well in terms of its severity. All I know is that hospitals are overflowing right now, and it's not pure COVID at this point. It's a variety of respiratory things. It's kind of the onset of winter respiratory problems. And it could be that all of us masking for so long probably put our immune systems a bit to sleep in terms of not having to deal with too much in the way of viral onslaught. And now we've taken our masks off, and our immune systems are taking a while to catch up.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, there are some who believe that's the case, particularly with the RVS, which
well, Sandy, it it's to me just watching it and knowing that the hospitals are already full, and we do know after the holidays there's going to be a price to be paid for all of us
getting together.
Yeah. Getting together, and if they're already full, we are going to be looking at some difficult days ahead. So not telling anybody not to spend time with their loved ones and their families, because I'm going to be doing the exact same thing. That's what the holidays are for. But man, if you can get a chance to get some vaccinations in before that,
so you not only give your loved ones a present, but you don't give them a contagion, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, I had whatever it was that I had for a few days last week, and as you hear me, I sound a lot better, right?
Sure you do.
Yeah. Come on, man. My nose is not running, all those things. And I attribute that to the fact that I got those vaccinations a week ago. A week and a half ago. And it takes a while for the antibodies, right, in your system. But they do push back, right?
Well, they do. It depends on whether what you got vaccinated for. But,
right.
But, the RVS, a lot of these viruses have a 4 or 5 day just general course. And so maybe could be you're just getting well in the normal course of things. We should be getting vaccinated. We should not ignore the proposition that first of all, coronavirus seems to be a permanent player And people who are particularly vulnerable to disease and have a weak immune systems probably need to seriously consider getting vaccinated.
So let me jump to this, because only basketball fans know this. What is the guy's name, man? I just had his name on the tip of my tongue. He played for Utah and now plays for the Bucks.
Inglis.
Yeah.
Ingles. He's gonna have his debut with the Bucks today, I think.
You ever see him play?
I haven't seen him play. Apparently he's got a good outside shot.
Not only does he have that, he is a phenomenal basketball player who is going to change the Bucks.
Cool. He's 35, but apparently he's still got a lot of fire.
He's 6'8". Ah. And he handles the ball like a 6-foot guard. He's a heck of a passer. He's a heck of an outside. He's the real deal.
Well, I heard they also say he was a really peppery defensive player. So he's got the whole thing.
He's all of that. So if you can imagine a 6'8" player who is probably going to be their best 3-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
With all the players they have,
yeah.
I'm telling you now, he's their best 3-point shooter. And they've got some good 3-point shooters. He's by far the best. And
does he play off guard or does he play small forward?
He plays probably a small forward.
Point forward, yeah. So he's the Middleton.
Yeah, he's 6'8".
I know, Middleton's. Well, I'm just saying he's going to make Middleton. He'll take some time.
No. He'll take some time from Cunnington. He'll take some time
from Middleton.
From all of them.
Yeah.
He can even play guard. And I was just thinking the other day as I went on and watched some footage of him, because I remember him at Utah, and he used to kill the Bucks, right? Every time the Bucks played them, he was the guy who would just destroy the Bucks. And because he was out, he had torn his Achilles, he was out an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started watching him, his playing. Said, man, the Bucks just added this guy. Man, he will take them to another whole level.
I think it was his AC.
Yeah, his AC.
Yeah.
But he's going to take them, Sandy, to another whole level. They'll not be able to slack off and set up that wall that they set up with Giannis. Because if somebody doesn't get out on him, you know.
The way Portis is shooting. Actually, I thought I was. It's kind of fun to watch the Bucks when they don't have the
Giannis. I know
they play a different game, and they play team ball. And not that he's a detraction at all, but I do think that if they've got to figure out a way to play with Giannis and play that same fast moving team ball.
Remember this moment in time when I said to you,
yes.
Ingles is going to take them to another level.
It's like plastic. in the Graduate. Yeah, right?
He clearly is that kind. And I remember now, the Bucks tried to get him 2 years ago, and he didn't want to come. And at that time, Utah was putting together a great young team. And I could understand why he didn't want to leave then. But Sandy, he is an absolutely game changer. I'm not saying he's going to do that the first day he walks in. I'm talking about as they get into the spring and as they prepare for those playoffs, he's a total game changer.
They're playing the Pelicans tonight, right?
Yeah, he's a total game changer. And I didn't realize that he was that close to coming back. And so I thought he was still several months out.
Yeah.
But to know that he's ready to come back now gives him a full complement, basically, of players. And I'll tell you what else. Marshawn or...
Yeah, Beauchamp.
But that guy is... kind of pretty good. He's a
yeah. He looked good in the beginning. I think he must have some deficiencies on defense or something because they, you know, he got a bunch of minutes in the beginning and then they shrank it down to about zero and they threw him back in the big loss game they had and I guess maybe he was looking better then.
Yeah, well, he scored 18 the other day. He's a pretty athletic, great shooter, and you just go down the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I have the feeling that. That Hill and Matthews are going to see less time.
Yeah, well, they will.
Matthews is definitely seeing less time, and so you know I think he's probably there to defend. You know, when they've got someone like LeBron or someone, they throw him out there.
I might even see Ingles playing a big guard. He can kind of when George Hill, he'll take some of George Hill's time. I forget they've even got Carter.
Yeah,
I mean they're really loaded, and I think they'll have a chance to win another championship this year. And I think that was the whole plan all along. They're loaded, man. I'm really excited about what the Bucks are going to be doing. Listen, I didn't just come to talk about the Bucks, but I really was excited after watching that game. Was it Saturday night?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And then thinking they're adding this guy, too. And, man, they're going to be pretty tough. But we got a lot to talk about this morning. As always, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. And if you haven't been outside,
yeah,
you better warm up a little bit. Make sure the kids are wearing the right kind of clothes and hats and gloves and mittens and boots and all those things. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, as Congress races to finish the $1.7 trillion spending bill before Christmas.
Isn't it interesting? $1.7 trillion and the defense budget is $850.
Almost half.
It's exactly half.
I know. So, and both sides agreed to that.
Yeah, no. In fact, Biden proposes an $820 or $812 billion, and Congress says that's not enough. We need to go up to $850. So it was like a significant increase, a 12%. I think it was a 12 or 10% increase above the request for, which essentially, presumably, the Pentagon participated in the request from Biden. And so Congress just overrides that because it's just not quite enough pork in that barrel for all of the military-industrial kind of complex folks.
So, but again, Democrats and Republicans can both come together on that. But the other side of it, Republicans are demanding cuts in those programs or we won't sign the bill.
Right.
How can you talk about cutting those programs, Sandy? This is the part of all of it that...
Well, this is why on our show we keep coming back to the fact that we've got to examine our foreign affairs and our military budget, because it is standing in the way of us, of child daycare. It is standing in the way of universal health care. It's the thing that keeps us from doing the things that the people need. The middle class of this country is suffering mightily. I think we can demonstrate that. We have kind of repetitively over the last couple of weeks. If you look at the median income family, they're struggling, and we can't give enough money to the military, but we got to argue about every one of the programs that's on the other side of the budget. So it's like two sides to the budget. Half of it's military, and the other half we need to argue about.
You know, it is more than frustrating, Sandy, when you have, you know, people who say we're spending too much money, which is what we keep hearing again from the Republican side of this. We're spending too much money. We got to cut that.
Well, everything that goes to people under some kind of a government promise is called an entitlement, which sounds like a handout, right? It sounds like some entitled person who's got their hand out and receiving things. But is Medicare an entitlement? I don't think the public would say that the medical care for the elderly is an entitlement. It's a program. And most of the other, if we had child daycare, would people say that was an entitlement?
You know, Sandy,
is grade school an entitlement?
Yeah, well, you know, man, at the risk of sounding redundant, I'm just going to keep on talking about it. Because as the American people, we can't, excuse me, we can't be silent and just again say it's okay that both sides agree only on one thing, and that's the wasteful military budget. We know it's wasteful. They know it's wasteful. And there's no talk of cutting that, but then... What is the guy's name? He's the guy who was trying to, Kevin McCarthy, and he says, "Well, we can't agree with things because we got to cut this budget, and so we can't settle the budget because it's too much waste." I mean, I don't know if Sandy, if it's just you and I. But we've got to keep knocking on the door, right?
Well, most certainly. You know, everyone knows, even everyone in Washington knows that the military budget is a dark hole, and that if you want to hide an expenditure, if the government wants to hide an expenditure, all they have to do is figure out some rationale for sticking it in the defense budget, and no one will ever find it. It's a huge bunch of expenditures with little or no effective oversight. You know, when people are arguing about a budget and all they can do is argue about how many billions of dollars there should be in it, as if the spend in dollars is the fundamental policy issue at stake. But that's the way we deal with the federal military budget. It's just a spend number. Is $812 billion enough? No, $850 billion is what it takes.
You know, Sandy, when we say there's a limited amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. In that budget, and you don't say that when it comes to military spending, but everything else, there's a limited amount of dollars.
Well, you know, the rationale for that is that the military budget is there to make America safe from invasion, to make America's democracy safe from foreign powers, okay? But the way we spend the money and the way we operate internationally goes far beyond that kind of an image. You know, it goes far beyond that kind of a goal. Our activities in Iraq were hardly designed to protect America's freedom. You know, it was designed for regime change in Iraq. It was
we don't even know
what it was designed for. The initial invasion of Afghanistan had the rationale of chasing Osama bin Laden, who had come to the United States and had caused a problem. Okay, that fit within it. That was the first 12
but
months.
But not for 20 years.
Yeah, the next 19 years are hard to explain.
You know, we got to go to a break. But we got to continue the conversation, and whether you believe it or not, this has to be addressed. 844-967-2789. Got to go to a break. It's Mondays. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So, Sandy, this is it. At 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, we're talking about the budget and the fact that both Democrats and Republicans have agreed to almost $100 billion increase in military spending in 1 year. And the half of the $1.7 trillion budget is just about military spending. And at the same time, soon-to-be House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is saying that there has to be cuts unless there are some responsible measures to either cut spending or balance the budget.
Well, the only way, if you don't cut expenditures, you have to raise taxes, Mr. McCarthy.
Well, I mean, it's not even funny.
No. Well, what's not funny is that these people just talk about dollars and they don't talk about programs. So the press releases, the debate, everything is denominated in total dollars for a project. I mean, the Democrats were at fault too in the Build Back Better plan. All we did is talk about whether it was $1.7 trillion, and it took months and months for them to actually break it down for us so that the American public could realize what was in there that was actually good for them. But it allowed people to attack it based on the total dollars. You know, I don't understand why we let Washington operate this way, where we give the military a total pass, a bipartisan pass, and in fact we give them even more than they ask for, I guess, so that we can demonstrate the legislators can demonstrate when they go home what a machismo hawk they are. And then with respect to all of the other dollars, we have to argue that we don't have enough left to spend, and we have to cut it here and cut it there. And again, they talk just about dollars. They aren't talking about the programmatics or the impact on the programs. And the American public isn't given the opportunity, because it's all kind of talked about in this odd way, to actually jump up and down and say, don't you dare cut, you know, the child daycare tax credit, for instance, or some of the other things that seem to be on the table to be argued about.
Listen, we got to go to the phone lines. Hey, Tom, what's going on, man? How you doing? What do you say?
Hey, good morning, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, so we must never forget that. Again, it's so frustrating. Money and politics. You know, and how we have to get money out of politics. And if we all just actually zoomed in on that one thing in America, jumped at once,
it's not going to happen, man.
That's not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen. But with an attitude like that, it definitely won't either. So we have to do a little more can-do and try to figure out a way to make it happen either in our local governments or somewhere so it will spread. So therefore, school boards and things like that are not being destroyed by money and politics as well. It's just like the American people just want to take their head and hit it against a wall. everything that we spend our tax dollars on are things that we don't even see the return on investment from. We don't see the return on investment on, child care and health care. And, you're talking about the military-industrial complex. I really want to see someone propose that on every pay stub that you get from your employer, that it shows where our tax dollars are going. And if it's 60% shows it's going to the military-industrial complex, to the military, then it should show that on a pay stub. So people might actually wake up and go, wow, I'm spending this much money is being spent out of my paycheck when I pay 30% of my paycheck to taxes, that this is going towards this. Maybe that would wake people up in America, that they could actually see it. Just like we talked about last week with $15,000 for the childcare, $15,000 for taxes, $15,000 for healthcare, $15,000 for rent and utilities. A person has to make $60,000 in order just to even be a middle class person in this country, which is absolutely ridiculous. And we have 2-3 people that own more wealth than 90% of the country. And we just sit back and we just take it. I just don't get. We sit back and we listen to McCarthy talk about fiscal responsibility when the Republicans are the most unbelievably. They'll pick a little pet project where they went and they studied bees or something like that is what they'll come up with and say, oh, we shouldn't have this program, or we should really cut the earned benefits. Not entitlements, but earned benefits of Medicare and Social Security.
So, Tom. So when you say there are people who are against retirement savings legislation for people in the bill, they think that that's another handout.
The enlargement of the 401k.
Yeah, they think this is kind of a handout.
Yeah.
And
has anyone done the math on how a 401k works out for somebody? It doesn't work out very well.
Well, these are the people who
I really wish that we'd get back to maybe canceling all 401ks and putting that money back into
pensions and whatnot.
Government, well, not only that, just back into the government program rather than being privatized.
Well,
everything Republicans want to do is privatize everything.
Well, the 401k actually was an interesting. It was really pushed by people like National Chamber of Commerce and others, where businesses wanted to get out of the pension business. They had these fixed benefit pensions, and it wasn't turning out very well, and was an expensive part of their, and they were having trouble catching up on funding. And so I got an idea. Let's let people fund their own pensions. So the government decided that was a good idea as well. But the amount that they allow, in today's world right now, what they allow is, I think, a maximum of $22,000 a year that goes into your 401k. And if you do the math on that, that sounds like a lot of money, except that you have to make a lot of money to be able to put aside $22,000. It doesn't get you to the same level of pension as you would have gotten under the private pension arrangements.
One of the main issues, Sandy, again, is the business community keeps winning, and the people keep losing.
And the people keep on propping up businesses.
How can we possibly, the citizens, convince our elected officials that they should be looking out for us more so than they are looking out for the business community?
Well, I think we have to point out just exactly what Tom was pointing out earlier, that is that the median family, the middle-income family in this country, is underwater. They can't buy clothes or food because when they get done spending the $16,000 on health care and the $15,000 on rent and the $16,000 on daycare, they can't make it.
But who are we looking to convince?
Well, politicians, obviously. We've got to get the politicians to talk about these people. And I think what the problem we've got is so many Americans are projecting the American dream. They aren't experiencing themselves, but they think everyone else is. The people who are in this boat, the people who are earning $64,000, $65,000 a year and are sinking, they have their noses below water, feel guilty about it. They think they're the only ones in that boat. And they think that everyone else is doing well, and I don't know what's wrong with us, dear. Why can't we work this out? And the fact is that the American families of this country, the middle-income families of this country, are sinking, and their nose is below water. And if they all knew it, if they all knew that everyone else was in that boat, maybe we could start a political movement that would start focusing attention on the things those people need. And what those people don't need is more Patriot missiles.
The business community is at the root of what's caused the pain that they're experiencing, because they have been able to control the politicians that we elect, and then the politicians do the will of the business community, not the people.
Well, they do the will of all kinds of private interests, and it's this isn't like the Chamber of Commerce isn't unified on all this stuff, but everybody's got local private interests that come to their door, knock on it, and they get their way. And the people who don't get their way are the public who need all this kind of support. And what happens when that support comes up is exactly what's happening right now, where people say, no, we're billions of dollars beyond what we ought to be spending. We can't spend more money on child daycare. Meanwhile, they just adopted the $850 billion defense budget, which consumed all the dollars that could possibly be headed this other direction. It's crazy, and it's the fact that politics has become completely deflected into talking about what bathrooms people should use, okay? And all of the social issues that we are jumping up and down about is deflecting attention, and people think that's real politics? No, real politics is solving real people's problems.
Tom, quickly.
Earl. Yeah, I just want to say that, I find myself to be pretty politically astute. But the thing is, I never knew the difference between public and private until Tom Hartman said it probably about 10, 15 years ago. I don't think the average American out there, I don't think they understand the three branches of government either, but I don't think that they understand the difference between public and private. And I think that is such an important thing when the Republicans and even some Democrats want to privatize things rather than making it for the public. And the public is for a nonprofit. The private is for profit. And if you're constantly trying to go for profit, then what's going to end up happening is you're always going to be looking for a profit motive. And it's not going to be for the good of society. It's going to be for the good of the owner of the corporation that actually owns it. And we got to talk about more about the difference between private and public. And just like in school, you can't have two systems, a public and a private system, because we don't have that much tax dollars to go to both systems. So I hope that, in the new year and going forward, that maybe we even talk a little bit more to even the listeners about private and public. Because, I would love to hear also, Earl, some of these Republicans, CJ, and some of these other Republicans call in and defend what Sandy's talking about with the $64,000 middle-class budget and ask them for the solution. Hey, say, what are your solutions for that?
Hey, Tom.
So, anyway, thank you guys. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you talk about the Chamber of Commerce and the Chamber of Commerce dictating this is too much, that's too much.
No, actually, what I was trying to say is that the Chamber of Commerce has some things they're unified about, but the private interest that Tom worries about is really a whole bunch of different private interests. It's the medical community. It's the medical facilities manufacturers. It's the equipment manufacturers. It's the real estate development community.
It's all the oil companies.
It's all different private interests, and they don't act in concert with one another. They act independently, but the sum total of it is what's calling the dance. And that calling the dance has failed. We can have a much longer talk about what, and I think we have a break coming up. Tom's notion that it's either public or private, I would have some contest with what he's talking about there, but there's no question that we need to address the needs of that middle-income
family.
But I
still don't understand why their battle is not with those entities that you're talking about.
Whose battle?
The middle class is not understanding that those entities are the reason that they are now suffering. Because if you look at how much the profits have increased, mm-hmm. when they talk about Sandy, and they've been talking about for a long time about the redevelopment, the redistribution of wealth. The redistribution of wealth has already occurred and went from the middle class to those entities that we're talking about. There was somewhere along the line, the middle class lost its wealth. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy and I, we're going to continue to have this conversation because you should be having this conversation too, because nothing's going to change in this country until this country realizes that the middle class and of this community, in which I'm a member of, in this country, in which I'm a member of, who's seen what middle class used to look like and knows what it looks like now, because that's my life, and seeing what I was able to buy as a young middle-class person, and where I am today. And I do know, at the same time, the amount of billionaires in the country, over 750 billionaires now. You know, 20 years ago, I don't know what that number was. Sandy, can you look that up, please?
Well, 20 years ago, there were very, very, very few billionaires. Billionaires are a relatively recent phenomenon.
So now there's 750 or so billionaires in America. So inside the last 20 years or so. So yet the middle class struggles. So are we saying then, Sandy, that the gross national product of the nation had not been growing? It's been growing, and a handful of people have been benefiting.
Well, it's interesting. The wealth growth is a measurement of the value of the assets held by people primarily. Nobody gets rich. Nobody gets super rich off of income. People get super rich off of the growth and value of assets, stocks in the stock market or real estate holdings. Those are basically the two main pathways. GDP doesn't measure wealth in that manner. GDP measures economic activity in a year, the production, and essentially it would be a measurement of income, but not a measurement of wealth. And what's happened over the last period of time is that the wealthy, those who own assets, have had tremendous growth in the value of their assets over the last 20 years. Low interest rates, a lot of things caused the valuation of assets to fly way up. And people who just have income are stuck with whatever the outcome of their income is.
Which is the majority of the American people.
And there's no question that globalization and the pressures of a world economy have caused incomes in our country to not climb at the same rate as wealth has climbed generally. So the middle class in this country are experiencing much less wealth than is being experienced by those who hold tremendous assets. I don't think we can pit one against the other. What we have to do is have an economy that actually supports the middle class, and we have to have a government that supports the needs of the middle class. And that's where we're falling apart, because as our middle class has lost its health benefits at work, and we've become a nation where it takes two breadwinners in a family to live in a middle class environment for the middle class family, that means you need daycare. And we don't have daycare being provided. So the budgets of these people in the middle class have changed dramatically. The incomes have not flown up at the same level as the growth in wealth or some of the costs out there in the world, and including that budget. Maybe we haven't had inflation that's been outpacing the growth in income for the middle class so much, but the budgets of that middle class family have grown exponentially faster because of this shift in the nature, the profile of the middle class family and their needs, as well as the shift in the benefits that are being provided to them.
You know, Sandy, I've got two sons who go to work every day like everybody else and who struggle, who are doing all the things that we as a society say they should do. And they're not getting the same opportunity that I had. They're not going to be able to even live the kind of lifestyle that I was able to live. And so at the same time, the billionaire class continues. So they're two Americas.
Well, let's not. I think the billionaire class is great for getting us inflamed and talking about it that way. But the billionaire class still is like 750 people. That's barely a class. They have lots of assets. Those assets are not essentially taken from the middle class, because it's the fly up in value of their assets. The fly up in value in the stock market of their stock isn't really taken at the expense of workers, other than the extent to which the business model of those places of work are not providing adequate incomes or benefits to the workers. And it is true that over the last 30 years, the business model in America for many companies developed in the direction of having lots of part-time workers, having workers where the arrangement with the worker was styled so that there could be an avoidance of the payment of health benefits and pension benefits to the workers. Yes, that has happened, and we have far too many workers in this country earning something close to a $15 wage, or even below that in minimum wage places, such that when you have two breadwinners who earn $64,000 a year, if they're each earning equal amounts, they're each only earning $32,000 a year, which is very paltry.
So, but Sandy, the businesses in this country, the major businesses, their stock is really going through the roof.
Well, stock, see, I'm just saying the value of stock in assets has to do with what these wealthy people are willing to pay one another to buy the assets from one another. And so it isn't taken at the expense of. But what has happened is that the middle class has suffered in the nature of the change in the way they receive benefits, the nature of the budget they have, and they're falling behind desperately quickly.
Because the corporations have changed the way that they do that. Because back 30 or 40 years ago, the corporations saw fit to include those things that you and I are talking about.
Yes.
They no longer see fit in doing that. And so in the meantime, the middle class has been left to deal with that themselves.
Well, and I think the profile of the worker in America has shifted so that far fewer of them are actually occupying middle class jobs. If you have two income earners earning $64,000, neither one of them is earning the middle class income themselves, okay? So we have lots and lots of workers. Many more than half of the workers in this country are earning less than an income that would entitle them alone to be in the middle class.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.